The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
It is Mission Minded, Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. We have a brand new show we're going to be starting here in the next few weeks right here. It's called Mission Mind. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. Of course, Michael is an expert in the non-for-profit business as well as regular business. And we take your emails, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. I am Tony Curry. And Michael, we have another email to get into today. We're going to talk about Title 42, very topical right now. But how are you doing? Everything good?
I'm doing great. Navigating life as a 57-year-old like you every step of the way. And every day is a new journey. And every day is a new ache and pain that I wake up with. But it's better to be vertical than horizontal. Right.
let me ask you a question. So you're 57 as well?
I am.
All right. So this is really interesting to me because whenever I meet a fellow 57-year-old, the first thing you want to do is kind of compare yourselves a little bit. Am I where this person is? Success-wise, business-wise, look-wise? Do you ever do that? Do you ever look at other people around you and go, wow, I'm doing pretty well?
I got to be honest with you. It's just too damn depressing for me to do that. I never come out on the great end of that when I do that. No, I mean, I do. And, you know, with every little, like just this today, this morning when I came into the office, I started feeling like my blood pressure's up a little bit. Don't know why, it's back down on its own. I've never had high blood pressure. But the truth of the matter is, you know, I eat like a raccoon in a dumpster and it just whatever's there. I don't exercise. I'm too heavy for my size. And the list just goes on and on. I mean, I'm probably just a heart attack waiting to happen.
No. You've lost weight. You've lost weight. What are you talking about?
I did, but you know, all this office work and sitting on the computer, I've put it all back on because I cannot resist cookout milkshakes that are right by my house, and it's just too easy to go by, you know, every day. So it's that weak will. Back when I was in the Army and I was running 3 to 5 miles a day, you know, I could eat whatever. I could eat 4 desserts if I wanted to. Didn't gain a pound, was fine. But I'm telling you what, that middle age spread hit. I got out where I'm not doing exercising like I used to. But, brother, I'm telling you. Of course, my plan is right now that, you know, because people who know me regularly, they're like, man, Michael's putting on some pounds. So what I've decided to do with all those that don't know me is when I see them, is I tell them that I used to weigh 425. and then they look at me and they go, man, you look great.
There you go.
Like, well, you know, it just takes hard work and commitment. And they're like, man, you just keep doing what you're doing. I said, I plan to, brother. You know, I'm in it to win it. And so
there you go.
So yeah, I could live in this fantasy world that I'm really making great progress in life.
I'm one of those cats that I'm always moving, and not like moving from room to room, but my legs always shaking. My mom used to slap the dirt out of me at church because I could not stop shaking my leg. I'm just always moving. And even when I stand up, I sway left to right. I'm just a swayer. I just can't stop moving. And that kind of fits my metabolism. And I used to be able to eat whatever I wanted, whenever I went. I stopped drinking about 4 or 5 years ago, which you would think would really help my weight. And it's like, I don't know why it hasn't changed a thing, because you just think about all the calories that comes with alcohol. But yeah, eventually it will catch up with you. Eventually it will finally catch up to you. Like, I can eat whatever I want. But you talk about chocolate shakes, and I know that this turned into a diet show here, but it's funny because we're talking about the Montgomery Food Bank. But I'm telling you, man, if I can go 1 week without eating anything sweet, if I could stay away from sodas, I could stay away from ice cream or cakes and like Pop-Tarts, I can take off 3 or 4 pounds without even thinking about it. But man, I just love that stuff. I mean, I know, and of course I get into that, I deserve this. It's been a long day.
That's right.
You know, I got a DQ. I got a DQ right down the bottom of my hill. And I'm telling you, it's flipping killing me. I'm about ready to firebomb the place just so I don't have to get fat anymore.
Well, I mean, at some point you're like, you know, first of all, I've got genetics working against me. I've got my mother's birth and hips, so that's already problematic right there. And so, I've already got plenty of width, and now my girth is totally catching up all around. And yeah, but I'm sitting here like 57. Okay, most of the men in my life lived between 75 and 85, so that's kind of the range. And so, I'm like, do I want to live every moment of my life worried about everything and just overanalyzing everything I put in my mouth? And sometimes I'm just like, look, I get it. I've been married 39 years. I don't want to take my wife, coming up on my 39th anniversary, I don't want to take my wife for granted, but I'm like, where's she gonna go at this point?
Well,
No, she might surprise me.
much like we started this by saying that we kind of compare ourselves a little bit. 30% of this country is morbidly obese, which is amazing because we know there's enough food for everybody. But 30%, and that goes for socioeconomically challenged areas too. I mean, that's their vice. They're good cooks, and again, sometimes. Better foods for you are more expensive than the lousy foods, right? And so they are going to get fat because they're not, nutritionally, they're not eating the food they want. But when you see that and you're thinking to yourself, okay, I'm 10, 15, 20 pounds overweight, I need to lose it. Just think about 30% of Americans who are 35 plus overweight and don't really seem to care. I mean,
that's right.
We need comfort food. And I think a lot of people, got into that during COVID. I think a lot of people overate during COVID.
Yeah, and I will tell you this. This is just a fact. I've worked many, many years with the poverty population, and you have to understand that the food packaging that the government requires on there, I think it's a good thing. It helps you make better decisions. But the reality is that that is for middle class people when they're buying and they're making choices, and we do use those. We understand the breakdown between proteins and carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates versus simple carbohydrates and fats, and so we can make calculations. Now I know all that, and I still eat like a raccoon in a dumpster, like I said. But so that doesn't speak much for me. But the reality is, the vast majority of people in poverty don't know any of that. The audience will be shocked as how many conversations I've had with people that, nutritionally speaking, don't know the difference between a bag of apples and a bag of Oreos. And so when you are presented that and you're like, okay, well, these Oreos are so good, and it's not that the apples aren't good, but you're like, oh, I'm hungry, I'm just going to fill up, and you're eating processed stuff, but you have no sense of a sleeve of Oreos and how that's could be a half a day's calorie input, and it's all gunk. And because they don't know that, and it's because that information is not valuable in poverty. So, and until it begins to affect their health, then lots of times people and go to the doctor, then they start to get educated. Lots of times that's later in life when they are morbidly obese and they have established lifelong patterns of eating, and it's very difficult at that point to turn it around. So there's lots of real challenges out there when it comes to eating.
I think the only good thing about eating really lousy food is if you eat really good for about 2 weeks and then you do eat some lousy food, it cleans you out really well. Go eat kale and broccoli and shakes and stuff for 2 weeks and then have yourself a Big Mac and see how you feel afterwards. It's pretty amazing. All right, enough of our diet show here with Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. You can check them out. Great website, wonderful organization. They cover 35 counties in the state. You can hear this show at least 5 times a week on the TKR app. Thanks to the 100,000 plus people who have downloaded our app. And of course, on our podcast series, the podcast platform, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're on Audio Boom. And of course, all of our musically elemented shows on Spotify. You can listen to all of our shows. We've done well over 50, 60 shows here. So it's good stuff. We'll get into Title 42. I want to get your thoughts on that since it's topical. It happened last week. But we did have an email we didn't get to last week. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Trina in Decatur. We do try to get to every email that's sent to us. Said that she just received her 2-year paralegal diploma. And this is perfect for this time of the year because my son just graduated from high school earlier this morning. We're recording the show here on the 15th or 16th of May. And so a lot of kids are going to be moving on and doing things and getting ready for their first major job of their careers. She said she's already been offered 2 different jobs with 2 different law firms, but they're all males. And she's super excited about it because she just got her diploma before she even actually graduated with her diploma. She's been offered two jobs. They're good paying jobs, she says in her email. But everyone, she says that she's going to these jobs and they find out they're all male firms, they kind of roll their eyes. They keep telling her to be careful. She said, am I being naive? She's 22 years of age and she wanted to throw you the question.
Yeah. Well, as a 57-year-old man, I will tell you, there could be, I'm not saying you are being a little naive. I'm saying there could be a little naivete there because, you have to think, the reality is, I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's right. But if you have an all male environment,
yep,
then there's going to tend to be a boys will be boys kind of, there could be jokes. There could be, you just aren't as sensitive to what you say because people there typically are not going to be bothered by it. And so when you bring a woman in there, it could shift the dynamic. In the past, I think we've come much further along as a society that we don't disrespect women in the workplace. That was just common. As a matter of fact, I was just rewatching Anchorman yesterday.
Wow.
I don't know that I watched it all the way through. I've seen so many parts of it. So I watched it all the way through. And, you know, just this woman who was a fantastic reporter was much more competent than the other news team, which, you know, just couldn't break through until she was did where there was no other choice but to put her on the air. And then she blew the guy away. But you have a woman who's going into this work environment. It's definitely going to change. People are going to either tiptoe at least a little bit, or they're going to test the waters to see what can they change. And so here's the things that I would anticipate. So let's say you go into an environment and let's say there's foul language used. You have to make, I think you have to expect that, even though you'd say, well, that's not a professional environment, but that's the reality of a lot of these environments. And so you have to ask yourself, is this something that I'm going to be troubled by? Or is this something that I'm expecting and I'm okay with?
Let me back this up. Is this something that women and I guess men maybe deal with it in the nursing industry because there's not nearly as many men nurses as there are women nurses? But is this something that women have to look at when they get into their next? I know a lot. Listen, you go and do whatever you want to do, whether you want to be an astronaut or something that is stigmatized as a man only type of thing, whether it's construction, whether it's soldering, whatever it is. Is this something that women? It makes me so upset that the women actually have to think this way. They have to think, this is a male-dominated type of business. Is this something I'm ready for? Because it shouldn't be. But the truth of the matter is, if we're going to be real here, it doesn't, whether it's right or wrong, if it exists, it exists for that person. We're not saying it's right. And yeah, men shouldn't act men shouldn't act that way, but we know they do. And I will say this, and certainly I'm not going black or white here. I've been around all women businesses, and a lot of women don't like working in all women businesses either because it gets to be a little uncomfortable there too. So, I mean, is that something that you should take into effect or into account before you actually take that job?
I will tell you something. My HR, who's a woman, and the other women that I work with, they talk about that they never want to work in an all-female environment. Everywhere I've gone, there's been women who comment on the challenges of working with an all-female in an all-female setting. And so there's typically just different dynamics at work, and you have to be realistic now about what those challenges are and then say, okay, if those people are speaking into your life, I always think it's good to sit down and go, okay, tell me what you think are going to be the issues. And just, I would encourage you to listen, get their feedback, and then evaluate and say, okay, well, if that does happen, is that going to affect the way? Because I'm going to tell you something. I know women whose sense of humor and language will rival any sailor out there.
Yeah.
And so they're going into an environment. They're like, somebody using profanity doesn't bother me at all. Matter of fact, I'll probably use worse profanity than they would. So, I mean, every woman is different. So I don't want to put all women in a box or all men in a box. And the environment they go in may be incredibly healthy. As a matter of fact, you could look at it as possibly saying, hey, they recognize they don't have women here, and they're making a concerted effort to bring women in to change the dynamic of that law firm. I don't know what their motives are. And it's certainly, there's nothing wrong with sitting down and talking about that as a young woman. But I will also tell you, again, I'm going to come at it from every side that I can think of. If you as a young 22-year-old woman give the impression that you're coming in there and anytime somebody says something you don't like, that you're headed off to HR, that's going to work against you. And obviously you've got two job offers. So you obviously are incredibly competent. They think you're going to be an asset to the firm. You have to decide what your lines are, what's acceptable to you and what's not acceptable. And then when those things happen that are not acceptable, I think most company policies are you go to that individual and say, hey, I think you crossed the line. I appreciate if you wouldn't do that. Now, here's the question. If that's a partner in a law firm, are you going to be able to do that?
Yeah.
And if you say, I'm just not comfortable with confronting people, then you have to say, okay, because if somebody makes a comment about your clothes or makes a comment about your looks or says something sexually suggestive and you don't address that, well, given how men are in that kind of environment, then that kind of stuff may continue.
Is there a subtle way to ask that question in an interview process? I mean, if you're the only female joining an all male firm, and I don't know if they had female, maybe they had to fire the last female, or maybe the last female wasn't comfortable and she left. I don't know why, but first of all, would it be okay to say, why don't you have more females working here? Or am I the first ever to work here? And then maybe kind of tread lightly through that area just to kind of know, or will that hurt you?
Well, I think now that she's been offered the job, there is absolutely nothing wrong with going and having a meeting with either the attorney who hired you or the HR of that firm and saying, hey, I just want to have an honest talk with you.
Yeah.
I'm being warned. It has nothing to do with your company. It has all to do with the fact that there's all males here. And while that doesn't bother me as a 22-year-old woman, if along the way something does happen, what is your advice about how to handle that? So you're coming to say, look, I want to fit in this culture. I'm not coming to disrupt this environment. I want to be a part of the team, but I also have a value system that in some regards, I could maybe let some things go, but there's lines that I am not going to allow people to cross, and I'm going to stand up for myself. But you don't want to approach it from an antagonistic to almost make it look like you're looking for something.
Yeah.
What you want to say is, hey, if that happens, and I'm not saying it will, but in the event it happens, just for my own peace of mind, who would I go to? Where would be the person? Where would be my outreach that I felt like I could address this if needed, and then listen to their explanation. And if they won't address that, if they say something, which I just can't imagine they would, but if they say something like, look, honey, you don't need to worry about that kind of stuff, then that's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
If they talk down to you, if they demean you, if they belittle you, if they call you sugar, honey, all those kind of things, what they're saying is your concerns really are not something they want to fool with, then I think I would definitely recommend you stay away from a company like that. But if you go in there and the attorneys are talking and you ask that kind of a question and they say, listen, that is something that we're going to work very hard to not be a part of. That's not the culture that we want. And we're not saying it won't happen. But if it does happen, our policies say you do this, this, and this, and I'm going to be in your corner and I'm always going to support you. So never worry about speaking up. And so I think that is an environment you're like, okay, I'm not saying there's no risk, but hey, I might be willing to go to that company, even though that could be a difficult, at least initial position.
Yeah, the truth of the matter is, if you bring value into that company, they're going to figure out a way to work around whatever it is. And I've seen it. Listen, I worked in radio where it was male dominated for years, and I can remember my 22nd birthday. I had a stripper in the studio, and we had an all female sales staff, and no one said a word. It's just the way it was. You could never do that now, and I'd never do that. But at the age of 22, I thought it was kind of cool at the time. Her name was Bubbles, by the way. We have Michael Coleman, Montgomery Food Bank, a show you can listen to at least five times. Times have changed. And a fantastic show. And by the way, I saw Aaron Brockovich for the first time last weekend. Great movie, by the way. Fantastic
movie.
Oh, I
haven't seen that in 15 years, I think.
Oh, man, what a great – I'm not a big movie guy, but, man, what a great movie. So check it out. All right. With the time we got left, we got about 10 minutes, and we can certainly continue this next week. Title 42 ended last week. I was pulling up some numbers before the show. Approximately 286,000 non-citizens obtained lawful permanent residence, LPR statuses, in the fourth quarter of 2022. That's the last stats we have. So nearly 300,000 lawfully. That doesn't go for the people who have come into this country unlawfully. And obviously we had, 10, 11, 12,000 a day for a period of time before Title 42 took place, or actually was nullified or taken out, which was a COVID protocol that Donald Trump put in place. And so we're bussing people off. If you're getting into this country legally, we're bussing you. We're taking you to sanctuary cities. And all I could think about was, I know, was it the Roosevelt, the hotel in New York City, which is a pretty high-end, or was a pretty high-end hotel, is now filled with immigrants in New York City. And I'm thinking, how are they doing this? These sanctuary cities, God bless them for what they're trying to do. But I just can't imagine with the influx of immigrants and people that want to come to this country. And let's remember, that's how this country started. I get it. I understand it. But all I could think about was, how are we feeding these people? And you know, the crazy thing, Mike, I saw a family from Venezuela who got into this country late last night on the evening news. They spent their last $70 to travel some 600 or 700 miles through jungles and everything. And this man, this woman, and their three children, they're sitting on the street in New York City outside this hotel. There's no room to get in. And they asked them the question, are you better off now than you were in your home country? And they said, oh, by 1,000,000%. We're good.
Yeah.
We're And I'm thinking to myself, oh, Lord, what are we doing here? I mean, they're homeless and they're in New York City, and they are so happy to be homeless in the United States of America than to have a place in Venezuela. That should tell you how horrible it is. So I'm very compassionate towards this. I believe that a human life is a human life, regardless of what your nationality is. And so I pray for people like this. But I want to get your thoughts from a food bank and from a Feeding America standpoint. What does this mean?
Well, it's an incredibly complex issue. I went back and just said, I just wanted to learn a little bit about, when you mentioned it, about where Title 42 came from. And it was invoked way back. And I think it was going all the way back to Truman, or it could even been before that. But it was all about, I think it went back all the way back to the late 20s. But anyway, it was about keeping communicable diseases out of the country. So they would ban people. And so Trump used this to keep people. And look, I do see there's validity on both sides. We don't want open borders because how do you have a country if you don't have some borders? And, we know that bad people who intend to do bad things cross the border freely and end up hurting people and hurting our citizens and putting a drain on society. But then there's so many people, like you talked about, who, man, if I was in their position in Venezuela or South American country or Central American country, getting to America is a dream. And all you want is what's best for your family. I remember being over in Desert Storm, and when we captured some Iraqis, and when I say captured, they were given up. They were, and there was a, at the time I was 26, and there was an older man. It looked like he was in his 50s, and you know, here's a guy that if we met on the battlefield, we'd both be trying to kill each other. And yet I was sitting there looking at him, and he's like, he just wanted to do, he was fighting for his country like I was fighting for mine. It didn't mean he endorsed everything. He had a family back home. He had probably had grandkids, but I know he had kids. And he just wanted to fight and get home safely. And I'm sitting there thinking, when you put that face on it, I mean, that's that that person's no different. If I was down in those situations, I would be doing everything I could to benefit my family. And people go, well, it's not fair to those who do legal. Hey, I get it. There are strong arguments on each side. But the reality is that our government, because they don't work together on anything and don't compromise on anything, really both are having very self-serving policies, and everything wants to be very black and white. And the reality is people are still coming over, and they still become, I mean, they're going to fall on nonprofits like ours. I mean, it's no secret that we have a Hispanic community all over the state of Alabama, just like every other state, and especially when it comes to agriculture. But these communities, I'm telling you, it breaks my heart, because these communities stay hidden and they communicate with themselves, but they have real needs. We will get here in Montgomery, somebody will come up and they don't speak English, and it'll be a couple of women and each carrying a child. And we address that specifically for them. I mean, we try to help everybody, but it's me particularly heart-wrenching, because they're in a country that they can't communicate. Their husband is likely out there working in a field somewhere, trying to make a living, not only for them, but to send money back home. Mm-hmm. And we play this game, like all these farmers and stuff, we play this game, oh, I don't have any illegals working here. But to me, I know that these people, when they cross the bottom lines, they have to be fed. They have to, and it's some of the hardest working people I've ever, I mean, look, I don't know, I'm not meaning to, this is only positive, but I have had people who come up and say, oh, I hope that there's a truckload of Mexicans coming to replace my roof.
Yeah.
Or I hope that there's a, because the work culture is so good and so solid that you rejoice when you see that, because you know, hey, they're going to do it quickly, and they're going to do a good job. And so I'm sitting here going, there's such value, because Americans don't get out there in the field and pick vegetables and harvest crops and all that other kind of stuff. But again, I see when you talk about fairness, when you talk, it's just such a complex issue. So I try to peel the politics away from it. I want to understand the politics. I want to understand each side's perspective. But the bottom line for me is these families and these children, they have to be fed. They have to. And it does fall upon us, regardless of how they got here, illegally or not. We're not going to turn our hearts and minds away from people in need.
That's well said. And I'll leave you with this on this particular show, because I know a lot of Americans who are born here that work hard and they want to protect our borders. And I understand there's drugs and there's sex trafficking. And I know there's bad elements that are trying to get in this country. I'm not foolish enough to think that's not happening, terrorists and everything else. But these people, they go, well, you know, you traveled 1,200 miles and your child was kidnapped and you had to give up your baby. And, you know, you had to go through jungles and you almost drowned and you've got six kids. Maybe you shouldn't have, you know, if you can't afford it, why are you having so many children? Please just stop. Just imagine, and again, please put yourself in their shoes. When you see a family of five that are sitting on the doorsteps of the Roosevelt and they can't get in the hotel to get a good night's sleep with their three children who are 5, 3, and 1, and they're saying they're 1,000,000% better off sitting on the front doorstep of a hotel in New York as opposed to being in their own country, to imagine just how bad it must be for them to want to make that trip, that they're willing to give up their lives and their children's lives for a better life here in the United States. You're right. There is no, we are so black and white. We are so yes or no. We just want to figure out how to do this and how to do it right. Make sure everyone's processed and there's just no way to do it. And whenever you're talking about big numbers in anything, I remember Hurricane Katrina. We did a horrible job at handling Katrina. Well, we'd never seen anything like that before. We did a horrible job with COVID. Well, we had never seen anything like that before. When you have mass amounts of numbers of human beings being funneled into a small line and asking everyone to be processed, vaccinated, whatever it is. And we can't figure out how we can't do it quicker, faster, and more efficiently. And then we wonder what we did wrong. Sometimes there's just no way to do it. I mean, there's just not. So be compassionate, try to be helpful, and say a prayer for these people.
Well, yeah, and it's a rule that I live by and I try to do everything by, which is if I'm not 100% convinced on an issue and there's a chance of me erring, which is 99.9% of the things in my life, I always want to err on the side of too much mercy rather than too much judgment.
Amen. Amen. Give the benefit of the doubt. That's good.
That's right.
Michael,
that's
we got to go, man. Thank you so much. We'll catch up next week. We can continue this talk. And I know you always get great topics. And again, if you have any emails, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Make sure you download that TKR app and check them out. Montgomery Area Food Bank, their website, or mafb.org. Michael, thank you.
Appreciate it, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.